Today's Washing Tech episode is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and 30-day free trial at washingtech.com/book. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. And also Warby Parker. Get a free 5-day home try-on at warbyparkertrial.com/joe. 5 pairs, 5 days, and the try-on is 100% free. That's warbyparkertrial.com/joe.
This is like a fundamental shift in how information moves and how information is manipulated. And that's why I think it's something we need to be prioritizing.
Welcome to the Washing Tech Tech Policy Podcast. We deliver the latest tech policy news and brightest tech policy experts to you. Wherever you are, so you can stay productive, relevant, and informed in less time. From Washington, D.C., it's the Washing Tech Tech Policy Podcast with Joe Miller.
Facebook and YouTube faced a rough week of complaints and ad boycotts. Microsoft holds forth against employees opposing a military contract, and Renee DeRest is my guest. The news this week is best organized by company. Let's start with Facebook. A new British Parliament report is calling for new regulations against the company. Parliament's Digital Culture, Media and Sport Committee concluded an 18-month investigation against the social media giant, finding it routinely breaks privacy and competition laws. The committee report is non-binding, but it could pave the way for additional regulations. Back here in the U.S., the Federal Trade Commission issued a complaint against Facebook, saying the company reveals sensitive health data in groups, and the FTC is currently in the process of negotiating a multi-billion-dollar fine with the company. Also, several groups, including Common Sense, filed an FTC complaint against Facebook for violating children's privacy laws and pushing kids to make in-app purchases. And The Verge posted an expose yesterday on Facebook's treatment of its contractors working for Cognizant to moderate content. Apparently, content screeners paid less than $29,000 a year are the first line of defense in preventing harmful content from being posted to the site, and they're routinely exposed to disturbing content, which takes an extreme mental toll on these workers. Facebook claims it's working to alleviate some of these working conditions. Turning to Google parent Alphabet, YouTube is facing an advertiser boycott after a YouTuber published a report detailing how comments and recommendations on normal products like bikinis ultimately nudge users to access inappropriate videos of children. The YouTuber's report called it a child soft porn ring. Users post comments within the videos that included timestamps that show children in compromising poses and positions. Nestle, Disney, and Fortnite are among several advertisers that have pulled or restricted ads from YouTube because their ads appeared alongside the inappropriate content. YouTube reiterated its zero-tolerance policy for such content and deleted millions of the comments in question. In other YouTube news, the platform announced that going forward, it will prevent anti-vaxxer channels from hosting ads. YouTube cited its policy against dangerous and harmful content. And YouTube's parent company Alphabet's Google unit announced that it will end its policy of forced arbitration regarding worker disputes. Microsoft CEO Satya Nadella defended a $479 million military contract with the U.S. Army to supply the company's augmented reality system, HoloLens. More than 100 Microsoft employees signed a letter protesting the contract and asking Microsoft to back out. But Nadella said the company won't withhold technology from what he deems to be democratic governments, such as the United States. Finally, a bipartisan group of senators wrote a letter to the Departments of Energy and Homeland Security yesterday, urging them to block Huawei technology from accessing U.S. electrical systems and infrastructure. Several weeks ago, Congress blocked Huawei from accessing the nation's telecommunications infrastructure, as security officials believe the China-based company is working on behalf of the Chinese government to spy on the U.S. You can find links to all these stories in the show notes and also in our Twitter feed, and our handle is at WashingTech. Stay with us. Washing Tech Tech Policy Podcast listeners, Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial to give you the opportunity to check out their service. You can listen at the gym, in the car, or on your morning run. How about The Square and the Tower, Networks and Power, from Freemasons to Facebook by Niall Ferguson. You can download Square and the Tower free by trying audible.com. Sign up for your free audiobook and 30-day trial today at washingtech.com/books.
tech policy is global policy. This is the Washing Tech Tech Policy Podcast, serving the world.
My guest today is Renee Durest, the Director of Research at New Knowledge and a Mozilla Fellow in Media Misinformation and Trust. She investigates the spread of malign narratives across social networks and assists policymakers in understanding and responding to the problem. She's advised Congress, the State Department, and other academic, civic, and business organizations and has studied disinformation and computational propaganda in the context of pseudoscience conspiracies, terrorism, and state-sponsored information warfare. Renee has degrees in computer science and political science from the Honors College at SUNY Stony Brook. She is a 2017 Presidential Leadership Scholar, a staff associate at the Columbia University Data Science Institute, a Harvard Berkman Klein Center affiliate, and is a founding advisor to the Center for Humane Technology. Renee Durest. Renee, welcome.
Thanks, Joe. It's great to be here.
So it took me a while to find the right starting point here because I had to break out of my own state of paralysis.
Yeah.
And I'm just one of 326 million some odd Americans with rents and mortgages and bills and work and family obligations. It kind of reflects the paralysis you say our lawmakers are facing as they address defense, education, healthcare, domestic terror, and all these other issues.
Yep.
And since they're working on all these issues in parallel, it's really hard, I think, for them to go beyond just doing sort of the bare minimum in one area and then moving on to something else and just making incremental progress here and there. But you see this information world war as being sort of the ground zero that policymakers should be focused on right now. You see foreign influence on U.S. politics conducted via social media and with tactics most policymakers haven't even imagined as being sort of evocative or should be evocative in some way of how the country addressed World War II.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. So there's a lot of really big issues facing our country, a lot of areas where lawmakers have to spend time, climate change, environmental policy, economics, all sorts of things. But I think that the key challenge here is that this is like a fundamental shift in how information moves and how information is manipulated. And that's why I think it's something we need to be prioritizing.
Was the 2016 presidential campaign sort of the Pearl Harbor?
So I think this problem has been more of like a slow boil over many years. ISIS misused social platforms to spread propaganda, actually kind of in much the same way Russia did. But I hope that recognizing what happened during the 2016 election kind of woke us up to the future threat.
And in your report to the U.S. Senate Select Committee on Intelligence, you highlighted how Russia's Internet Research Agency targeted and continues to target African Americans. And a recent Pew report found that 8 in 10 African Americans value social media to amplify issues that aren't normally discussed. That's compared to 6 in 10 for both Hispanics and whites. Tell us about what you found.
So African Americans were likely targeted first and foremost because they have some very legitimate grievances that Russians were able to exploit over a period of years. So this wasn't just about the election. But at the same time, the other reason that they really leaned into to manipulating the African-American community in particular is that they are a powerful voting bloc, particularly for the Democratic Party. So cultural pride was a big angle for the Russian trolls. A lot of their material targeted Black women in particular, with posts about Black culture, beauty, family, social challenges in those areas, even things like the fact that nude describes kind of like white people toned skin, skin color when they're trying to buy shoes or hosiery and stuff. So they had all of these like kind of legitimate grievances, large and small, a lot of stuff about police brutality. But what they did was they built up feelings of pride. They built in groups. They said like, we are a community for African Americans. And then they took that in-group pride and they layered on a political angle during 2016 specifically. And that's where you started to see the content that said things like, as Black people, we can't vote for Hillary Clinton, that kind of thing.
And so this is a propaganda campaign that's not unlike, I guess, the George Birch Society's opposition to civil rights, which sort of provided the foundation for a lot of the opposition to social justice that we see today with libertarians, dismissing it as some kind of a Marxist postmodernism, or it's just strange how these things have evolved. Also in your Senate report, Renee, you argued that not enough focus was placed on Instagram, also owned by Facebook, during last year's hearings. Have you seen any movement from policymakers here?
Yeah, so Instagram had dramatically more engagement than we previously known. They'd made a lot more, the Russians had made a lot more accounts on Instagram than Facebook, created more posts, got more engagement per post, but Facebook execs didn't really bring up Instagram during hearings. Google didn't really call attention to the fact that they owned YouTube either, but there's no movement by lawmakers specifically for Instagram because they can't write regulation targeting one company. This is ultimately an ecosystem problem. But that said, you know, Facebook and Instagram themselves can lean in and make changes. And Facebook had their war room for the 2018 election. They're increasing moderation, that sort of stuff. But ultimately, Instagram is really hard. Messages travel differently. People use pseudonyms. There's not any URLs that, you know, you don't use URLs on Instagram, so we can't find immediate evidence of suspicious dissemination. So it's just a lot harder to detect.
So back at the cocktail napkin here, what are you recommending in terms of a counteroffensive?
Yeah, sure. So let's look at like three things. So first foremost is the establishment of multi-stakeholder threat sharing, right? So big tech, small tech, government, researchers, academia, we're all seeing different signals. And there were early efforts to combat things like spam and child exploitation and terrorism. So there are frameworks, past frameworks we can draw on for how public-private partnerships can achieve results. Second thing would be establishment of regulatory oversight for tech companies. I think we all know that's coming. Even Zuck agrees it's needed at this point. And then finally, though, would be the reevaluation of the cyber doctrine, which is to say that information operations should be treated the way that we would treat any other cybersecurity problem. Persistent threat actors exploiting an information ecosystem, and there's nothing right now to deter them from doing that, from messing with it. So U.S. has to really come out with some declared principles and rules of engagement, because as a democracy, we are disproportionately vulnerable to these types of strategies. So it's time to really rethink and prioritize having a national strategic response framework in place.
Maybe you should head up U.S. Cyber Command. You probably don't pay enough, which is another topic for another time, hopefully before it's too late.
It'd be great to work with U.S. Cyber Command. I think, you know, they've got some real expertise here, and it's just a matter of thinking through, what it looks like when public and private partnerships are working.
Well, thanks for joining me.
Thanks, Joe. Thanks for having me.
Now let's turn to your icebreaker, get some career advice from you, and hear about what you're reading and watching these days. Okay, so it's time for this week's icebreaker. Ready?
Yeah.
Okay, what's the best piece of advice you've ever been given?
There's a mantra I really like. I think it was actually Barack Obama who said it, so it wasn't given to me personally, but it's be useful, be kind, be fearless. And I think that those are just three things that really go hand in hand. And I'm always trying to think about how I can live that way.
I've asked this question before. Carson Martinez, back on episode 134, said the best piece of advice she'd ever gotten was don't judge your insides by other people's outsides, which has since become the best advice, if not that I've ever heard, than that I've heard in a long time. So I was reading some of your interviews, Renee, and a lot of the groundbreaking work you've done over the years has been the product of your side hustle. You researched the anti-vax movement when you were working full-time and expecting your first child, which led you to your work with the Obama administration and your current work. Tell us about how you resist the urge to just, watch Netflix. Because I think we all have different projects percolating in our minds that we never really seem to quite get around to them. What drives your curiosity about this stuff? What keeps you moving?
I do watch Netflix sometimes with my husband. But I think it's the, I need something to like, I need like a mission or a goal. I always have to have something I'm working towards. And I love what I do. I'm fascinated by systems. I like understanding how they work. There's always something new to learn. They evolve. So especially in cybersecurity, you know, there's always a new threat, new way to manipulate, new fascinating thing to kind of get to the bottom of. I'm like a huge planner. I have like weekly goals and like 5-year goals. There's always like a schedule. So I'm probably the least spontaneous person on the planet. But I've got two little kids and two careers in our household. And so I just feel like really setting goals and then holding myself to them. It helps me feel like not everything is like chaos all the time.
But obviously you're a reader. So what are you recommending?
I just started Martin Burry's book, The Revolt of the Public, and it's absolutely gripping. It's about the ways that social media has empowered the public and how the public is using that power to attack societal institutions, but it's not replacing them. So Gurry was a CIA analyst. He's a fascinating background. It's a really great read. And I think that understanding like crowd psychology is particularly potent now that technology has really democratized access to putting out messages in a way that we didn't have previously. I'd say also The Square and the Tower by Neil Ferguson is really good on that topic. And then there's a book that I love. It's one of my favorites. It's from 1841, and it's called Extraordinary Popular Delusions and the Madness of Crowds. And I read it when I worked on Wall Street because it's mostly about, like, how did the tulip bubble happen? You know, how do these moments of of mass delusion and irrationality come about. And I think that right now, given the current kind of political and social climate, it's even more relevant today.
Well, thanks again, Renee, for joining me. What are some takeaways you'd like to leave with us? And where can folks find you online?
So I write for Wired Ideas, and then I put up my stuff on reneedaresta.com also. But I'm most active on Twitter. I'm extremely online. No Upside is my handle on there, and I love talking to people.
And you've been listening to Renee DiResta, Director of Research at New Knowledge and Mozilla Fellow in Media, Misinformation, and Trust, and principal author of the first comprehensive analysis of data submitted by social media companies to the U.S. Senate as part of its investigation into Russian influence in the 2016 presidential election. Renee, thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me, Joe.
That concludes episode 175. Thanks so much for listening. If you like what we do, we'd love to hear from you. Please take a moment, head over to Apple Podcasts, give it a review. It helps others know what they can expect and really helps us out. Thanks again for listening, and I'll see you back here next week. Take care.